Still at a loss for words, Colonel. Never mind. I'm sure you are listening, so I will congratulate you on the ground you have covered up to date. Quite remarkable, especially in view of Miss Montero's break upon your progress.
Arrogant bastard, Claudia whispered bitterly. He's everything, and a male chauvinist pig to boot.
Quite frankly, Colonel Courtney, you took me by surprise. We have been forced to redeploy our stop lines further south to welcome you.
Again there was a short silence, and then suddenly General China's voice was full of malice.
You see, Colonel, we have found where you buried your Matabili.
Claudia felt Sean stiffen beside her, and the silence drew out until China spoke again.
We dug up the body, and we were able to judge how long it had been in the earth by the extent of putrefaction.
Sean began to tremble, and China went on affably.
A Matabili can stink like a dead hyena, and your friend was no exception. Tell me, Colonel, did you put that bullet in his head? Very sensible thing to do. He wasn't going to make it anyway.
The swine. The bloody swine! It was wrung out of Sean.
Oh, and by the way, the booby trap didn't work. Very amateurish effort, I'm afraid.
China laughed easily.
And don't worry about the Matabili. I made it easier for the hyena. I put two of my men to work on him with bangas. Bite-sized chunks, Colonel. Matabili goulash.
Sean lunged for the microphone and snatched it to his mouth.
You depraved bloody animal, he yelled into it. You filthy ghoul, by Christ, you better pray I never get my hands on you.
Sean broke off, panting with the strength of his outrage.
Thank you, Colonel.
There was a smile in General China's voice.
I was getting bored with talking to myself. It's good to be in contact with you again. I've missed you.
With a huge effort, Sean resisted the temptation to reply and switched off the set. Pack up. His voice was still trembling with fury. China will have us pretty well pinpointed after that little outburst. We've got to move fast now.
Like we were dragging our heels before? Claudia asked with resignation, but stood up obediently. Yet their progress was slower this night. Twice before midnight, Matatu cautioned them to wait, warned by his animal's sixth sense of danger ahead. He went forward to scout the track and found the ambush that had been set for them, and each time they were forced to make a slow and stealthy detour to avoid the trap. General Tiputip's men, Alfonso muttered. He must be helping General China. There are men waiting for us on every path. However, after midnight, their luck changed for the better. Matatu came across a well-used path running almost directly southwards and discovered that only a short time before, a large detachment of men had passed along it in the same direction as they were headed. We'll use their spoor to cover our own. Sean seized the opportunity and put Matatu in the lead, with Claudia following him, while he and Alfonso took the drag, deliberately treading over the small, distinctive footmarks of the leading pair, obliterating them and losing them in the heavy sign which the party of Tiputip's men had left behind them. They hurried along the path until Matatu's sharp ears picked out the tiny sounds that the Renamo patrol was making as it moved forward in the silence of the night. Then they moderated their pace and trailed them at a discreet distance, letting the patrol run interference for them. Keeping in contact with the enemy, maintaining the strict interval that was the line between discovery and concealment, was a delicate and eerie business, for which they had to rely completely on Matatu's hearing and night sight. But they were moving at almost double the pace they could have hoped for without this assistance. A little before dawn, the Renamo patrol stopped just ahead of them, and they crouched in the darkness and listened to them setting up an ambush on both sides of the pathway. Once the ambush party was settled in, Matatu led them on another detour to meet the path again further on, and they struck out southward once again. "We've covered 25 miles, by my reckoning," Sean murmured with grim satisfaction, as the first delicate light of dawn paled the eastern stars. "But we cannot risk moving further in daylight. The country's crawling with Renamo. Matatu, find us a place to lie up for the day." During that night march, they had moved into an area of wet flay ground on the approaches to the Save River, and now Matatu led them deliberately into the tall swamp grass. They waded knee-deep across the floodplains that guarded the river, picking their way between shallow open lagoons from which the mosquitoes rose in grey clouds. The water covered their tracks, and Sean brought up the rear of the file, meticulously closing the swamp grass and brushing it upright behind him to disguise their passing. A few hundred yards off the path, Mitatu discovered a small dry island only inches above the level of the floodwaters, and as he stepped onto it, there was a violent upheaval in the reeds as a heavy body rushed through it. Claudia screamed with shock, certain they had blundered into another murderous Renamo ambush. However, Mitatu whipped out his skinning knife and, with a shrill war cry, dived into the grass. There was a wild commotion as he wrestled with a writhing, scaly body, twice his own size. Sean rushed forward to help him, and between them they clubbed and stabbed the creature and dragged it out of the grass onto the island. Claudia shuddered with horror as she realized that it was a huge grey lizard, almost 7 feet long, with a speckled yellow belly and a long whip of a tail that still twitched and lashed from side to side. With squeaks of glee, Matatu began immediately to peel off the scaly skin. "What is it?"
"Matatu's favourite delicacy, leguan."
Sean wetted the blade of his trench knife on the palm of his hand and then helped Matatu butcher the monitor lizard. The flesh from the tail was white as the fillets of Dover sole, but Claudia grimaced when Sean offered her a strip.
"You and Matatu would eat your own offspring," she accused.
"That from the girl who dines regularly on Mopane caterpillars?
Sean, I really couldn't force myself. Not raw.
We haven't any dry wood for a fire. And you have eaten Japanese sashimi, haven't you? You told me you loved it."
"That's raw fish, not raw lizard."
"Same difference. Think of it as a kind of African sashimi," he coaxed her gently.
When at last she gave in and tasted it, she found it surprisingly palatable, and her hunger overcame her squeamishness. For once, there was no shortage of water, and they filled their bellies with sweet white meat and flood water, and then curled up on their blankets. With the tall swamp grass swaying over their heads to protect them from the burning sunlight and the eyes in the sky, Claudia felt secure and gave in to her fatigue. Once, in the middle of the day, she woke and lay in Sean's arms to listen to the sound of the searching hind.
"China's working the river banks ahead of us," Sean whispered.
The sound of the hind's turbos rose and fell as it turned on each leg of the search pattern, and Claudia felt her stomach muscles knotting and contracting as it grew louder, passing only a short distance south of where they lay, and then finally faded into silence.
"He's gone," Sean hugged her. "Get some sleep."
She woke again with a sense of panic upon her, but when she tried to move, she found herself held down firmly, and the palm of someone's hand clamped painfully across her mouth. She turned her eyes sideways, and Sean's face was close to hers.
"Quiet," he breathed in her ear, "not a peep out of you."
When she nodded, he released her and rolled over to look out through the screen of swamp grass. She did the same, and peered out across the shallow waters of the lagoon. At first she saw nothing, and then she heard someone singing. It was a sweet, girlish treble, softly piping a Shangani love song, and with it came the sound of light footfalls in the shallow lagoon water. The singing came very close, so close that Claudia instinctively shrank nearer to Sean and held her breath. Then suddenly the singing girl stepped into the line of her vision, through the aperture in the grass before Claudia's eyes. She was a slim and graceful lass, just past puberty, for though her features were sweet and childlike, her breasts were big and round as Tsama melons. She wore only a ragged loincloth pulled up between her long, coltish legs, and her skin glowed in the late afternoon sunlight like burnt molasses. She seemed as wild and fey as a spirit of the forest, and Claudia was instantly enchanted by her. In her right hand, the girl carried a light reed fishing spear with multiple barbed grains, and as she waded softly through the lucid warm waters, she held the spear poised to strike. Abruptly, the song died on her lips, and she froze for an instant, and then lunged with the grace of a dancer. The shaft of the spear twitched in her hands. With a happy little cry, she lifted a long, slimy catfish clear of the water. It wriggled on the end of the spear, its wide, whiskered mouth gulping and grunting, and the girl clubbed its flattened skull and dropped it into the plaited reed bag at her waist. She washed the fish slime from her small pink-palmed hands, picked up the spear and resumed her fishing, coming on directly towards where they lay in the patch of swamp grass. Sean reached out and squeezed Claudia's arm, cautioning her not to move. But the black girl was already so close that with a few more paces she would stumble over them. Suddenly she looked up, directly into Claudia's eyes. The two of them stared at each other for only a moment, and then the girl whirled and darted away. In an instant Sean was up and racing after her, and from the grass on either side both Alfonso and Matatu rushed out to join the chase. The girl was halfway across the lagoon before they caught up with her. She tried to dodge and double back, but each way she turned there was one of them ready to cut her off, and at last she stood at bay. Wide-eyed and panting with terror, but holding the fishing spear determinedly in front of her, her courage and spirit were wasted against the three men facing her. Like a cat surrounded by Alsatians, she had no chance of escape. Matatu fainted at her flank, and the instant she turned the point of the spear towards him, Sean knocked it out of her hands and swept her up under his arm. Kicking and clawing, he carried her back to the island and dumped her on the dry land. She had lost both her straw bag and loincloth in the struggle, and she crouched naked and trembling, staring up at the men who surrounded her. Sean spoke to her in soft, soothing tones, but at first she would not reply. Then Alfonso questioned her, and as soon as the girl realized that he was one of her own tribe, she seemed to relax slightly, and after another few gentle questions, made a hesitant, breathless response. "What does she say?" Claudia could not restrain her concern for the child. "She's living here in the swamps to hide from the soldiers," Sean answered. "Renamo killed her mother and Frelimo took her father and the rest of her family away to cut trees in the forest. She escaped." They questioned the girl for almost an hour. How far ahead was the river? Was there a crossing? How many soldiers were there at the river? Where were the Frelimo cutting trees? And as she replied to each question, the girl's terror abated, and she seemed to sense Claudia's sympathy and look towards her with a pathetic, childlike trust. "I speak English a little, miss," she whispered at last, and Claudia was startled. "How did you learn?" "At the mission, before the soldiers came and burnt it and killed the nuns."
"Your English is good," Claudia smiled at her.
"What is your name, child?"
"Miriam, miss."
"Don't get too chummy," Sean warned Claudia grimly.
"She's a darling little thing."
Sean seemed about to reply, but then thought better of it and looked up at the sunset instead.
"Damn it, we've missed China's radio schedule. Let's get ready to move out. Time to get cracking."
It took only minutes for them to gird up for the march, and with her pack on her back, Claudia asked,
"What about the girl?"
"We'll leave her here," Sean said.
But something in his voice and the way he looked away worried Claudia. She started to follow Sean as he stepped off the island into the water, and then she stopped and looked back. The black girl still squatted naked, staring after Claudia unhappily. But behind her stood Matatu, and he had the skinning knife in his right hand.
Realization dashed over Claudia like a huge wave of icy anger.
"Sean!" Her voice shook as she called him back. "What are you doing? What are you going to do to this child?"
"Don't worry about it," he told her brusquely.
"Matatu?" She began to tremble. "What are you going to do?"
And he grinned at her.
"Are you going to..."
She drew her finger across her own throat, and Matatu nodded merrily and showed her the knife.
deal, he agreed. Kufa.